Hi, I'm Oliver Berquez, co-founder of 40 Fit. Welcome to the Brain, Brawn and Business Podcast. A podcast is to get successful people on, just to talk about what inspires them, what motivates them, the successes and the challenges they faced in business, how they've overcome them, what they've learned along the way. It's a really practical podcast trying to offer real value to the listeners and things you can implement on a daily basis, things around business and strategy and habits, lifestyle, performance. Hi everyone, just before I start the episode, just a couple of things to just talk about. So my guest today, Jamie Marshall, is he's owned Premier Print and Promotions for 29 years. And it's those 29 years of staying in business that is very valuable in this episode, the insight he gives into what's allowed him to continue to grow and develop, stay ahead of the game, the longevity he's had in business, and he shares some really practical advice around that. What you'll get from Jamie, well, he's a very kind and he's a very caring person, and he really values his staff, his supply chain, and he has some really good core values which he shares in the episode, and I'm sure there's some really good bits you can take from it. Just to let you know about something I've got coming up, my next lifestyle transformation program starts 6th of January for business owners or senior level executives, just to help them people perform better, become healthier and develop the habits that's needed on a daily basis to maintain that performance and productivity. If that's of interest to you and you're looking at starting to think about the new year now, then drop me a message and we can talk about the suitability of the program. So yeah, episode coming up now with Jamie. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, podcast community. Welcome to another episode of the Brain, Brawn and Business Podcast. Today, I'm with Jamie Marshall. Jamie, thanks so much for coming on, mate.
Morning.
So, Jamie, yeah, we chat. As it's funny. The introduction is quite short and sweet here, mate, in terms of business owner for 29 years of Premier Print and Promotions. And the big thing is 29 years. So you've gone for a long period of time. And actually, the longevity in business is something we can talk about today, being around that long. So great guy, great energy. I think you're going to get loads on the podcast today. Jamie, thanks so much for coming on, mate.
No problem.
Anything else you want me to add to that?
No, not really. It is literally a career of 19 to 48 in the same company.
Amazing.
With millions of changes.
Yeah. And that's brilliant. I mean, I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure there's been some ups and downs in there as well.
Oh, yes.
Of course. So that's Jamie. Thanks for coming on, buddy. What was your first job after college, uni?
Right. So didn't really like school. So didn't like being told what to do by the teachers. It's a bit of a – that's happened a lot in my life, being told what to do. Not very good with authority. So left school with nothing, basically. My mum said my school life was – she felt like she was a boomerang because she kept going back to the headmistress's office all the time. So that kind of explained my story.
So you left at 16?
16 with nothing. When I did one day for my dad – who works in the glazing industry, he had me putting L's on windows in a school. So I had to write like 350 L's on windows in a day. That was my first day's work. Finished, told my dad I couldn't do that anymore. That was horrendous. I wasn't doing it. And he said, well, son, you better go and get a job. So I literally went to the job centre. They had one job, which was at a massive printer's called Heron Print in Silver End. Went for the job, went for the interview. The guy said, you'll kind of work out I'm a bit of a blagger in life. Guy said, how did you get on with your exams? Because I hadn't had my results yet. I knew I'd kind of failed them all. Failed, got fives and fours. Said, you've got to be an A-level student to get this job. And I said, well, in my understanding, the equivalent of an A-level is an O-level A or B. And he said, that's correct. He said, so how did you get on in your O-level? So I said, oh, I've got A's and B's. That was my answer. I got the job. Walked in there, totally blagged it. To be fair, was very good at the job. All the A-level people they had, not being arrogant, but I was better than them at the job. Worked there for 18 months. Went and then went for my second interview of all time and went for with a guy called Steve Macklin, who would be a mentor in life, who sold print. He was what we call a print farmer. So basically, he was a middleman, just sold print. He was awesome at it. He was absolutely brilliant. Taught me about sales. I was his understudy. So he would go out to meetings and what have you, and I'd run the office and do sales all day. I absolutely loved it. So I worked for Steve, learnt my craft, and Steve then made, sorry, Steve, if you're listening, but Steve made a massive mistake and decided he wanted to go into manufacturing. So he bought a big factory, bought machines, got machine minders, got the whole thing. And I suddenly sat there one day and said to him, Steve, you've done all this stuff, got all this plant, got all these people. Who's actually going to run it? Who's actually going to be the production man? Who's actually going to deal with this? Steve's answer was very swift and was that, well, you're doing all that, Jamie. And I was like, well, I'm 19 and you want me to take all this responsibility. Happy to do it. I'm expecting like a lovely big pay rise for this. And the answer to that was, no, haven't got budget. You're on the same money. Just doing it. I said, no, it doesn't work like that, Steve. Extra responsibility, extra money. That's how life works. No, I haven't budgeted. So we had a bit of a blowout. And he kind of called my bluff and he said, well, you've got two choices, haven't you? You either do it or you leave. And I said, well, I'll be leaving. He didn't believe me. So a week later, I left. Bit of a big decision. Went home, spoke to my dad, said, I've left my job. Dad, this is what's happened. Dad said, I'm proud of you. You made the right decision. What
that's
are you
nice
going
to said that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He said, you know. He was wrong, you were right. So, but what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. And you're going to like this bit, Ollie. He said, there's a gap. He was chairman of Whitton Town Football Club at the time. And he said, there's a gap. All the local football clubs are really rubbish at selling their advertising. You can sell anything. Why don't you sell their advertising for them? He said, why don't you set up a company and sell their advertising for them? You've got Whitton Town as a contract already. Straight away, you can do Whitton Town. So, with that, I sat there with him and my other friend, Peter Braun, the Bear, was he was in non-league football as well. I think, by memory, he was working at Chelmsford City at the time. He was their commercial manager. So he was into football, so he knew a bit about it. So we set up a partnership between the three of us, and that's where Premier was formed, which I'd thought of another name, because there's about a million Premiers in the world. But, Premier was formed. They put in $2,000 each, and I put in my car, which was worth $2,000. And we set it up and off we went. So we had Whitton Town, Hapy Swifts, who you know well.
Yep.
Wiven Hoe, who were the big team at the time.
They were big side.
Yeah, had a lot of money in there. So that was quite a nice one for me. So I started doing that and we were selling advertising. But I always had the buy and sell in me from Steve. I'd learnt it. So every time I was talking to people, I was saying to them, like, you know, what... Well, I'm here. Who does your printing? Who does this? Who does that? And people were giving me little jobs here and there. And people just kept asking all the time, and my kids love this, ask for pens. People always said, we need pens. And so I started offering pens, and I didn't know how to get them. So there was a local company in Colchester who's still there under a different form, but there's a company called Almalad in Colchester. And I started buying pens off them. And literally, that's where it all started. And then basically, as time went on, the promotion side got and the print side got bigger. And the advertising side became quite hard work and a bit boring, actually, if I'm being totally honest with you. I just didn't really have the drive for it. So I just started sending more and more promo. And
it's like loads want to ask you on. And
yeah, go on.
No, which is great. So first of all, and this, I think this is really interesting because advertising become harder and obviously...
No, I don't think it become harder. I just become a different person and I didn't want to knock on someone's door and ask them for £100 advert when I could sell them £1,000 worth of pens. I kind of like doing £1,000 worth of pens. So
maybe if it didn't become harder and stuff like that, but actually you worked out what's profitable,
yeah,
and started to go down that route,
yeah.
And I think this is a really valuable lesson. I'm hearing you talking, I'm thinking it makes total sense. As in, sometimes we can be caught up on an idea
mm-hmm.
in business.
Yeah,
we've created it. We have pure love for that idea.
Yeah,
and it's going to work, whatever. But if you can almost detach emotionally from maybe that idea and be creative enough and allowed to be able to adapt, to go down another
route. Yeah, you've
got
to be adaptable.
And this is what I sort of see in what you're talking about is, you know, you sold advertising and you had this, you've sold advertising, you've set up your new business, your premier, and it's going really well, but you had the foresight or you had there's something in you that thought, you know what, we might have started advertising, that was the way forward, but that's not where the money is. We're going to adjust the business model.
It is lifestyle as well.
By adjusting it, I think that's really important for people listening, or for business. You have to adapt to grow. You just can't be tunnel vision. That is the only way we're going to do it.
Yeah.
You've got to be creative. You've got to adapt. Things don't work. Assess, analyze it, review it, and then go on to the next thing.
29 years of doing that.
Yeah.
You change all the time.
So I sense that in you. So I can say, so early on, you're seeing that.
Yeah.
And actually, it's probably one of the biggest attributes that's probably going to lead you to be as successful as you have for 29 years, probably your ability to adapt and change and grow.
You've always got to. I'm quite intrigued by things. So you've got to always be looking, always be seeing what's happening. I know someone asked one of the questions on LinkedIn about how you survived in the business for that long, but you've just always got to be looking, seeing what's going. You've got to listen to what's happening in the world and see how you adapt your business to that, basically. Yeah.
So going back to that, because obviously yesterday I put on LinkedIn that we're going to go live, and it was great. One of the Dean actually, he's a great guy actually, Dean, but he come on, he mentioned it, he asked a question about family being involved in print. So as we're talking about it now, you mentioned it. How have you stayed successful in business for 29 years? And the reasons I asked that question, and some of the things that fascinate me, is 29 years ago, there wasn't social media.
Yeah.
The digital age we're in.
Yeah.
The technology we're in.
Yeah.
Internet weren't even around 29 years ago.
No, it wasn't. No.
You had to market somehow.
Yeah.
Like, so how have you evolved to stay on the curve?
The business has changed massively through the years. So you talk about that. It's quite interesting. I had an office that was probably 10 foot by 4 foot. When I started, with me on my own, with a typewriter and a landline, and that was it. So the things that people don't do nowadays, like pick up the phone, I had to, because it's all I had. I had no other. I had face-to-face meetings and a phone. So it was the only way I could do it. And obviously, in those 29 years, it's changed massively. I mean, like, incredibly. But I would say for 18, 19 years of my 29, we did no marketing. My whole business was built on referrals. And that's just through
relationships,
good customer service, looking after people, a lot of banter. I mean, I'm a banter person. So getting on with people and just finding out where their pain was and solving it. And that's what I worked out. That's what I'm good at. I've had three main rules the whole way through, which I never knew I had, but I've kind of realised, and that they're quite, and not the rules you would probably think. There's three important things in my business. The most important thing is the staff. So you look after your staff. You make sure 100% you just totally look after them. You just totally make sure that they are all right, and that you do everything you can for them, because they will always perform for you. If you look after them, they'll always be your main ally. Second one is you always look after your supply chain. You pay them, you give them good artwork, you talk to them, you train your staff well so they deal with them in the right manner, they're polite, they're courteous, and you look after them. They're your friends. Without them, without my suppliers, I have no business. So they're the first two. And the third one is your customers. You look after your customers.
Yeah.
And you just make sure those customers just feel like their experience of dealing with Premier and dealing with the company has to be the best experience, because they come back, and repeating customers is the easiest game in the world.
Yeah, and if I can add, Cal, have you gone live on that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. Good, they've just gone live on LinkedIn.
I'll just put a bit more pressure on me.
Yeah, I know, mate. No. So anyone that's listening in, we're on our podcast with Jamie Marshall on the Brain Born of Business here at 4D Fit, and we're just getting into longevity of Jamie's 29 years in one business, which I think is valuable. But something which struck me about what you said there, and three things, and I think this is really important. I use you as a customer for my businesses in terms of the promotional work, the stuff we've done. And the fact you've been in 29 years, I've come back as a repeat customer. So things like efficiency at dealing with stuff, very competitive with your pricing, which is obviously really important.
You have to be.
Of course, but customer service is great. It gets dealt with. And something which has really struck me, actually, we spoke before we went off air, before we went on air, and Cal, I don't know if you heard that, was obviously in the last order of T-shirts that weren't your fault, but it's funny, it was something but it was dealt with so efficiently, because we're not always going to get it right,
yeah,
that I don't think anything, it's like, funny enough, I said I've got to speak to Richard to order my next batch of t-shirts for the gym here. But it's been dealt with in the right way. That's, so it's not like, oh, God, I'm going to move. Oh, that wasn't great. It just got dealt with. And it's like.
But you have to learn.
But I think it's great because you're not always going to get it right. So the fact you've dealt with it in a way is almost like a tip my hat even more. It gives you more credibility that when it's not gone right, you've dealt with it really well.
I get bigger. I've had bigger customers and more business from things that have gone wrong. I was going to use a bad word there. But things that have gone wrong because. When you then deal with it in the right manner, the person doesn't remember you for the fact that the job went wrong. They remember for the fact you sorted it out and you delivered it, and you there was no problem with it, that you actually sorted the problem out. You always in life, you're always going to have problems. It's how you deal with those problems. You have to learn from every experience. You have to. You've got to get over it is the first thing. You've got to get over it. No one's died. I always say that in the office. People like look depressed about stuff, and I'm like, well, no one's actually died on this, have they? Someone's buggered up some pens or some t-shirts or what have you. We'll get it sorted. We'll get it fixed. We'll deal with the customer. We'll talk to the customer. We'll make sure they're all right. And then we'll learn. We'll then go back through our supply chain and look why that happened and how that happened and whose fault. And we're very good as a company of actually admitting the suppliers like it, we admit it when it's our fault. If we've made the mistake, quite often there'll be people swearing and having a go at people and it'll all be going off everywhere. And then you're like, and the supplier's done this, supplier's done that. And you're like, but hang on a minute, you've done this and you've done that. And actually, you've not helped them at all. So we've got to put our hands up and take the blame for that. And we then sort that out. And that works. And you learn from it. And they learn from it. And because you're honest and you're truthful, the suppliers just respect you 100% for that. And your integrity's there. So that works. And the customer respects the honesty and the integrity. I mean, obviously, not all customers do. And, you know, we tend to not deal with the people who don't. I think you were talking about that earlier. If we don't like people, we tend to not deal with them. You know,
it's just damaging and stuff. But I think that's great. And, when someone's been in business 29 years, it gives you such credibility. You're doing things right. Mm-hmm. Overcome hurdles. So anyway, man, I just want to credit you that. See, I'm a customer of yours, so the service you provide is great, and I can see why. And when you mentioned your three main rules, how important it is, and when things go wrong, it's just making it. It's just intervening straight away, holding your hands up if you got it wrong, shows humility, and then diffuses the situation, and then making the situation right.
Yeah.
And that's what you do.
Leave a good feeling.
Yeah.
Leave a good feeling. Don't leave a bad feeling. Leave a good feeling.
Yeah. And you feel like. It's been done, and you talk about personal service. Another thing we spoke about, wasn't it, about when you get something generic, but when you get it personalized and someone's taking time to read it and stuff, you value that input from that person.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's cool. So great. So you're obviously a natural salesman. Now, have you done any training for that, or was that just in you?
Never done any training.
And so another thing I want to ask you about at school, actually, because you go out of school, come out of school, hated it with no...
But, I can't say I hated it. I hated the work. Yeah. I hated academia.
Yeah. But there's something in you that you left at 16. There's something entrepreneurial in you. There was this natural charisma you've got, the way you deal with people and stuff. For you to go on that within like 19, 20, you're then running your own business. So is it just the way you are? Is it the way you're wired? Is there things you've learned? I mean, you said Steve was quite a help to you early days. You learned
comes from my dad. My dad's an entrepreneur. But that's the most intelligent person I know. He's an entrepreneur. He gets everything. He's got gut feeling. He gets it all. And I just get it from him. It's just natural. I can't teach what I've got. I've got it. Whatever it is, I've got that. I'm lucky.
Yes, great.
I think if I was you find these things out when you're a bit older. I kind of think I've got quite high emotional intelligence, which helps with the staff. Although I'm getting a bit old and cantankerous now, so maybe not so much anymore.
That's why
I've got an amazing PA, to be fair, because she sorts all that out. Yeah. So, yeah. Salesmanship. I could be a good salesman for anyone. The emotional intelligence helps with the suppliers and that helps with the staff. And that's the big one, I think, is that you need to know how to deal with these situations. So I've not always been perfect. People would tell you I'm a very much different character now than I was 10 years ago. I'm much more mellow.
But do you think because as generations, people are different, so generation, millennials, I know people talk about these different generations we're in. Yeah. Do you feel you've had to change how you handle people?
Yeah, because they are very different now. Yeah. They're very lucky. I've got teenagers, so to be fair,
that helps.
That helps because I look at my younger staff and they're just a different animal completely. But because I've got teenagers, I kind of get it. I mean, they still say the most ridiculous things, which wind me up tremendously.
Yeah.
But they still say the most intelligent things that I think are amazing. So you've got that. But yeah, life has changed so much. People have changed so much. And I have changed so much. And Jamie Marshall at 30, and I think people in our industry will tell you I was very different. So Jamie Marshall at 48, he's a very different person.
So you've learned that through conversations, people may tell you, so Jamie Marshall at 30 is now at 48. You've obviously changed and learned. But what advice would you give to that Jamie at 30 now? What advice would you give to him?
Be calmer. Don't get divorced. Would be two of them. But a few people know about that one, I think. I've just seen her raised eyes over the back. But no. I mean, it's a tough one. Just think about people. Always do right by people. Always give up. Give advice. Give referrals. If someone asks you a question, to no advantage for yourself, always give them the answer. Always try and help them. Karma's a funny thing. I really believe heavily in karma. It all comes back and it all pays in spades. If you're a nice person, if you genuinely care about people and you generally do the right thing, it will always come back. You should always do that. And then the business lessons are know your numbers, always know your numbers. Know them inside out. Know everything about your business. Every aspect of trying to run a business, learn every aspect. Don't just rely on other people because you have to use your own intelligence.
So has that been important for you in terms of the longevity, staying on the pulse of it, literally, although you've now delegated, you've got a team around you, you still know everything that every department's doing. You're on the pulse.
It's a tough one. You've got to rely on people. We talked about this earlier. People are better at certain aspects of I'm good at sales. There's no doubt about it. I'm good at sales. Perhaps not brilliant at being an MD, but I'm good at sales. I have people in my place. I have a number two who's analytical, will go into everything, will go into detail, will look at it. So I let him do that. I will just say, this is yours, you have it. My sales manager, I let her get on with whatever she's doing. My PA, I let her do stuff because they're much better at it than I am. You've got to realise that. So you've got to let them know. And then when you're taking advice off people, listen to the advice, listen to everyone, listen to everyone in life, listen to the bin man, listen to the cleaner, listen to everyone, because they all help you in life. You must listen to everyone.
No, and I think this is great. And something, Cal, we've had, haven't we, a couple of people we've had on the podcast so far, it's been mentioned, and you mentioned it, and I think this is one of possibly the ingredients of the success you've had, about knowing it, is the art of delegation, having people around you that may be more intelligent than you, be better than you, playing in certain positions, which is great. So taking on the staff's been right. But the second point is empowering them to be that.
Yeah, let them grow.
To let them grow, to make decisions, to voice their opinion, to help. Because, like you said, dictatorship doesn't work.
No.
And
no.
If you are encouraging people to... Well, if you're encouraging people to voice their opinion on how it can help the business, it's great. Or second of all, which I think is really important, is if you can be constructive with people. So how can you help them get better?
Yeah.
So if they aren't basically doing something correctly, how can you show them a better way? So it's not, it's condemning and criticising. I just don't think anyone gets better.
Yeah,
I
perhaps was a bit like that in the old days, but not anymore. And you just, you've just got to help, you've got to nurture them.
If it's not the right way, show them the right way of doing it. Or how can they get better?
They've got to fit in with your culture. And that's what people, if they don't fit your culture, just don't have them. Just let them go. Let them go off on their way, because they have to understand. Like our office sometimes is like, I've got Ricky Gervais is the office. As is as bad as that sometimes. It's hilarious. I mean, the things that go on in there are just mad. But if you like that kind of thing, if you like banter, if you like having the pee taken out of you and you like taking the pee out of people, you fit into our office brilliantly. And people, we talked about interviews last night. Some of me and Ryan, some of the interviews we've done, staff were telling me last night what we did in the interviews, and I was like horrified at kind of what we did. But they knew straight away that was our culture. that there was going to be a lot of banter, there was going to be a lot of this. So then they fit. And then once they're in, they realise that we look after them and we will let them progress. I'm all about progression. I want everyone, my whole management team, there's four of us, they've all started at the bottom and worked their way up to the management team. So none of them, not one of them, was brought in on management level.
But to me, that's so good because they have bought into your company culture. Mm. They've seen the progression. People then coming into the business or whatever are seeing that journey.
Yes,
that's inspiring to them. If they want to progress in what they're doing. So interestingly then, you've got this crazy, balmy, behind-the-scenes culture, but everyone's having fun. But I know because, as I say, I'm a client of yours. I've seen your work. You're the professional. You get things done.
Yeah.
So then the question to you is, that's your company culture. Mm. If you feel someone's right for you, they've then got to come into that culture, or are you finding someone that's going to fit? How are you taking people on?
Well, in the interview process, we look at the CVs.
It's like 10 random questions you're asked.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've got to be honest, it ends up being two interviews normally. And I think the first one is very sensible. Padders, my PA, tends to do the first one with someone from a member of the team they're going into. I think they do it a lot more sensibly. Then me and Ryan get involved, and that's not very sensible normally. It's just
But then if they love it and they're part of it, you're like, yeah, well, they're employable.
Yeah, and they need to know, because truthfully, on their first day of the office, something will be said or something will be done. And if they haven't worked that out in the interview, they're going to be a bit shocked by it, because it's not like a normal office. There's just stuff going on. You know, my stress ball might hit them in the head or something. And, or some comment might be made to someone and they might just go, oh, God, I don't like this. So we have to kind of let them know that's what it's going to be. I don't know if we do it deliberately, but we do let them know what it's going to be like. And I think padders and whoever's doing the interviews do go, well, you're going to have to realise that the culture in here is, it is a bit balmy.
I think it's important. I think it's managing expectations. You know, same for me, so in the businesses I run, I've got a small team.
Yeah.
And it's a small team. And I know that actually you have a standard for doing things. So bringing someone in has got to be fall in line with that.
Yeah.
And actually you're encouraging people to then grow and develop within that. And that's really important. Right now, the gym, we've had a couple of coaches got coming in. We've had a change of staff a few weeks ago. But it's so much more in a positive place.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
And the people, the coach, they're great, really good with the people, really fall in line with the energy and the ethos of, say, me.
Of what you've built, yeah.
What the business is about.
And that's what we do. And we've got better and better at bringing people in.
Yeah, but for me, and this is a real lesson learned, actually, I've had to learn, and actually hearing you talk is actually reinforcing the lesson I've learned for myself, is you think someone might be right, and just because you think they're right, forcing it, even if they're not, you'll know, and to be more natural with it, actually, you have an ethos and it will work itself out.
It's never...
And I've had that. So previous coaching stuff I've done that weren't right. I thought they were, just because they had good qualifications or they had a certain way. It wasn't right. They've got to fall in line with the culture and their energy, if it matches what you're about.
It's really odd.
It goes further forward. So hearing you talk, actually has reinforced that.
That's odd what you're saying, though, because we've brought people in. And I've been very passionate about this person's going to be perfect.
Yeah.
They're doing it. They're going to do this and do that. And it's never been them. They've been the wrong ones. And the right ones have been people you really don't realise. And that you've employed them because they're great and they seem great. But they've developed. I've got people who've absolutely flourished through my business and who I'm so proud of the fact that they are just so good. I mean, we talk about my number two. We talk about padders. These people, they've come in on a certain role, end up doing a completely different role. And when new staff are coming in, when someone says, I used to be the delivery admin and now they're number two in the business, they look at them as if they're lying. And they're like, no, I used to drive a van around. I used to do delivery notes.
You're 29 years in business, and I think, which is evident in you, hearing you talk, and some really, it's quite inspiring actually, and some lessons to be learned is how you're empowering your staff. You're empowering your staff to perform better, to speak up, to have that opinion, they feel valued. And that's why you've had longevity. That's why staff stay with you. That's why you've got your number two, who was the delivery driver, who's now in the position he's in.
The biggest challenge of all time was we used to do a lot of work in the pharmaceutical arena. And we got to about the same time as that conversation in Hong Kong, we got to about 4.5 million turnover. And we were flying, literally flying. And one of my close friends in the industry, who's very knowledgeable, rang me because his family have got business in America. And he said, are you sitting down? And I said, no. And he said, well, you might want to sit down. I've got some bad news for you. And I was like, well, you know, what can it be? And he said, the pharmaceutical industry in America are changing the rules completely, and you will not, the pharmaceutical companies will not be able to give gifts to GPs anymore. They're bringing it in America, like from literally next month. And the UK always follows America. And considering at the time that was probably 60% of my turnover. Oh, my word. And I was a bit like, oh, it ain't going to happen. And he said, no. And he said, Jamie, just, it is going to happen. And it did happen about 6 months later. So I had to kind of reinvent the company completely. And probably bring on to one of your other subjects. That's when we did our first acquisition. So we had money in the bank. We had done very well. So I literally, and there's a really nice touch to this story. So I literally went out, started talking to company who I first bought my first pen order off, Almalad in Colchester, started talking to them. And I basically, in the end, bought their business. So they'd been going for 20 years. And we bought it, and it was a huge wake-up call, because not only did we buy a business, we had to do the deal. That changed a bit as it went through. There was a few spanners in the works and a few crosswords between us and them because things had changed. Then we had to take their staff on.
Did they come in under the Premier? Did you keep the name?
Yeah, no, they just come straight in under Premier. So we kind of shut down the old company and brought them into Premier. But we had like the situation where they couldn't tell the ladies that worked for them that they were being taken over. So we had the day of the takeover. Remember, we took them to a hotel in Colchester and had to tell these ladies that they were stopping working there and they were coming to work for us. So we were dealing with four women like crying hysterically in a room in a hotel in Colchester. Yeah, I was
not an easy conversation.
It was beyond my capabilities, that's for sure. Yeah. But we managed somehow or another. We managed to get through it. Yeah. Took them on and brought them into the business. And when we've just reinvented the business, totally. So the business is very different business. I mean, then it was hugely profitable with not very many staff. We had moved to our new offices, which we'd bought, but there wasn't very much. So we've literally had to double our numbers in staff in that time to get past the 4.5 million. But the orders are much smaller. There's a lot more work involved. It's a totally different business.
Do you know what? Do you think that challenge has really helped you almost? I know at the time you didn't, but it makes you then, because at 4.5 million, you're probably flying, you're feeling comfortable, things are great. And actually, when there's a challenge, there's a dip.
Yeah.
It makes you think, you can't coach, you can't feel get comfortable, you've got to constantly be on it. And actually, sometimes that just grounds you a bit.
Oddly, it's probably the best thing that ever happened to us.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
If I'd have had 5 more years at a pharma staff, to be fair, I could have probably retired. I could have probably sold it. We'd have been 10 million, we'd have been 12 million, would have been making an absolute fortune. But it didn't happen. So we've then had to reinvent ourselves. And as I said earlier about the Simon Putnick story, we now know everything about the business. We know inside out. We have to do marketing. We have to do all the things you do in a proper business. We do that now, and we know it, and we understand it, and we work it. We with my management team now and what we do now, we are better than we've ever been, ever.
But this is what I'm saying. I think actually a real good lesson learned. I think this is where, when you get challenged like that,
yeah,
you overcome it. It makes you more disciplined with money, mm-hmm. crunch numbers better, more awareness to the business.
Yeah,
you have
absolutely.
To be.
Yeah.
So actually, I tell you all the time, win or learn.
Mm.
You either get success, pat yourself on the back, move on. I actually posted that a couple of days ago about it.
Yeah.
Or you learn from it. And then when you learn from that, if it hasn't gone well, how can you get better? What can you do next time to make it improve? So I think there's a lesson in there.
And as a personal thing.
Now.
Yeah, it made me stronger. It made me a better character. I was a bit of a... And I will, for the first time today, I will swear, I was a bit of a Billy Big Bollocks at the time. I was literally having a tremendous time, making tremendous money.
It grounds you.
And it was all a bit...
And you're probably a better person.
Yeah, it was all a bit easy, truthfully. Yeah. And it wasn't proper. it's unfair to say it wasn't proper business, but it wasn't really proper business because I didn't understand it well enough. Whereas I understand it well enough now.
So when you get another dip, something happens, you do that. And that's just possibly one of your successes, I think, in business, where, which we've already spoke about, is being in business 29 years. That's a success.
Yeah.
And rolling with the times.
Yeah, rolling with the times. That's, to be fair, has meant that I can buy my own building. We're in our own premises. All that pharmaceutical stuff did that for me. So that was brilliant. So that was, it gave me the ground to go on it. And I had money in the bank. I had money in the bank and what have you. So at least I could get through. Cool. Other companies in our game who did the same as what we did went bust.
Yeah.
And they literally went quickly. So we did come out of it well.
So talk to me about your acquisitions. So you said you had six. So that was one acquisition.
So that was one of the bigger ones, actually. Yeah, we've done six or seven. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you how many. But we've done varying sizes.
What's led you to that? Is it opportunity? Is it opportunity you've seen it? Or is it felt your business needed it? You've gone on the lookout for it?
We come a bit well known. We did the big one with Almalad. And then all the people were like looking at us going, oh, they actually buy companies. So then people started coming to me and I get probably a call a month from a company looking for us to take them over. We're very fussy in the way that we do it now. It has to fit our criteria, has to fit in with what we're doing. Cool. I've learned loads from doing it and we've probably made quite a lot of mistakes. Realised we probably haven't dealt with it in the right way.
Yeah.
And now we deal with it in a much better way. Still learning, actually. Still trying different things. Still doing it. I think the next ones we do will be very, very different. And the way we're going to operate the whole business is going to be very different. We're about to change again.
Watch this space.
Yeah, it's constant. And that's probably that will reflect the whole way through this podcast. You've got to change all the time. Literally.
You also need to. Have you always had like compassion and humility? Because I mentioned that actually, compassion and humility and the right temperament to be able to take advice from people and learn and grow. Have you always been like this as a person, or have you had to change and be that? I tip my hat to you. I give you credit for this, mate. Because actually, 29 years in business, seeing you evolve, what you're saying in terms of overcoming stuff and where you are and moving the times, actually credit to you as a person.
Thank you.
Have you always been nice as a person, or have you had to be?
I've always been there.
Is there a moment in time where, Jamie, come on, mate, sort yourself out. You've been a pig-headed.
I've always been a bit pig-headed. I wasn't as nice a person a few years ago as I am now. Being happy in your personal life, makes you happy in your business life. Healthy body, healthy mind as well. So you've got to be quite fit.
Working on that.
Yeah, there you go. So you've got to have that. So that's very, very important to this. Yeah, I'm lucky, and I think this comes from your parents, I'm very down to earth. And I am on the ground level with everyone. I don't see myself as being better or bigger or whatever. Just being a business owner doesn't make you anything, really. You're all humans at the end of the day. And probably we haven't even touched on charity stuff and homelessness and stuff like that, which I'm quite into. We're all on this planet together. We're all the same. And we're all the same.
Great, though, mate, you say that. I think it's so important.
No, but it's massive.
And I think it can get lost now.
Yeah. It's massive.
Anything else around that tradition, the challenges, successes you can mention in business?
Yeah, learn from every of it and really investigate, get advice. If you're going on the acquisition mode, get advice. Speak to some people who've done it.
Yeah.
And again, go with your gut.
Go, yeah.
You know if it's good, you know.
That's
bad.
Relevant, I think, getting advice from people who've done it in anything, not just acquisitions.
Yeah.
See someone that's been there and done it. In it, Cal. Seeing someone who's done it, because we've chatted about this before. So if you want to get to somewhere in something, see someone who's done it.
Yeah, always. In life, everything, actually. If someone's done it, speak to them. I don't like personal hate is people who say they're coaches and they've never done anything. They've read a book or they've been on a course or they've done this. I don't agree with that. You've got to have done it. To be a coach, to be a mentor, you've got to have been there, you've got to have seen it, and you've got to have done it. Because when you throw something at them, they'll go, yeah, actually, in this business, this happened. You need to learn from that.
You've got
to
be in the trenches. Yeah. You've got to have some tough times, which obviously you've been through.
An odd one as well, an odd bit of advice. And a lot of people will question me on this. I think if you're buying a company, you have to like the people you're buying the company of. I think there has to be respect at least. And I think you have to like them because the deal's not, even when the deal's done, you've got to speak to them afterwards because there'll be questions come up, there'll be problems come up, there'll be queries come up. And if you've got a good relationship with them, they'll answer them all. They'll answer everything to you, and they'll give you it. They give it to you on a plate. Yeah. They'll give you everything. Yeah. They give you their life basically when
so
you buy
I think
their company.
Struck me with you. So human relationships are hugely important.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And
in every part.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really important. Last thing then, just to mention around this, you mentioned charity work and stuff, which I didn't know that. It's hugely important to you, helping others that are less fortunate.
Yeah, sort of always.
Where you come from.
Yeah, you always help everyone. I mean, the homelessness thing is a massive thing to me. I will get on my soapbox about this. I don't understand in a country where there is so much money, and there is so much money, how people can be living on the street. I cannot compute it. How the government, the politicians, they're bloody useless, to be fair, how they cannot find a way to get these people off the street. There are ways. Other countries do it, and we don't do it. And how you can walk around Chelmsford Town Centre and there's people begging. And then another thing that I hate is how people treat them, the people who are on the street. They're human beings. There's so many people in the world who are one step away from it. And I don't understand it. I don't. Why do people not talk to them? Why do people not buy them food? Why do people not give them? And people can have all sorts of excuses. Oh, I'll be feeding their drug addiction, or I'll be feeding that they're alcoholics. Well, you tell me. You sleep on the street in the freezing cold.
Yeah, my wife's great for this. She so with our little kiddies and stuff. You know, when we see them, we would always give her. We always give her money. She's very important, but she'll get my little kiddies 6 and 4 to give it to them.
Because
what she'll say is that look, not everyone's as fortunate as you.
Absolutely.
Not everyone has the privilege you have.
100%.
They go over and they'll chat to them.
Yeah.
So my daughter's chatting.
That's lovely.
Yeah, we were in London. We were in London a few weeks ago. She's gone up and she's done that. And my daughter's chatting to a homeless person.
Yeah, good.
And again, it teaches appreciating stuff.
Yeah, but it probably made that person's day. Oh, yeah. Just that you showed some.
Sometimes people spoke to, don't they, you know?
They want to be treated.
I know you can't give out to everyone and stuff because I know there's the cynical side, you can't do it all that. But actually, my wife's so good with that. Like, she's getting the kids now to
but
do
you,
it.
But they just want to be treated like human beings. Yeah, that's all they really want. And people don't. And it's horrible. It's actually, we're quite a horrible society for that. And
yeah, so mate, what you're doing there, mate, I didn't know about that about yourself and stuff. So, you know, well done for all of that work you're obviously doing, mate. It's amazing.
It's important. I don't do enough. I try and do certain bits. I've tried to get in on a business side of it. There's things going on with that will come, and I will talk to you about that when it happens.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, that's it's important.
So yeah, just going on to your sort of daily habits, morning, evening routine.
Yeah.
I know you've got two or three you can share. So
right,
start your morning one.
It starts 6 o'clock, out of bed, out the door by about 6:03 with the dogs. 5K walk every morning in the week, not the weekends, later at the weekends, but still do it. But yeah, so clear my head, take the dogs for a walk, exercise, get all that in, and just think about the day, think about what's going on, whatever I want. It's an hour of my time, and I love that. I love that hour. So we do that every morning. Then we get back, cup of tea, plan the day. Thanks to Rupert Miles. Didn't do it before, but I now write down every day what I want to do for the day, what I want to achieve, and I tick them off as the day goes on. So I do that. And then, and then literally off to work. I then get home in the evening. This is the odd one. Have a hot bubble bath every night for about an hour. I literally love that time.
Yeah.
And I either think about the day or what's going on or what I want to, you know, what's happened, or I listen to sport. I do something I want to do. It's an hour of my time.
But you might laugh as a habit, and we are creatures of habit, but there's real value in this. And this is what I think is really interesting, and it's something that's important from a productivity point of view, from a well-being point of view. So you taking a dog out an hour in the morning, how are you feeling going into your day?
Yeah, good. Prepared and relaxed. And
Yeah. So that's important to know. Coming home at night, having the hour, how are you feeling once you get out of the bath?
Yeah, chilled. It just chills me out. Yeah.
So this is really interesting when we can get really caught up. And again, another interesting thing we've had, Carrie, is like we can get caught up where we feel like it's just work.
Yeah.
But you need to find time for relaxation, some like meditation, some like whatever it may be. You need to find times for yourself, sharpening the saws, they say, you know, where you can't just basically, it just can't be work time, head up time. You need time for yourself.
Now, I'm hardcore. I am literally on it. So the Tyler, you are as well. Yeah. But my brain is constant. It's an irritation to me sometimes. My brain is always on it.
Mate, I get this totally, right?
Yeah.
I get it because I'm wired that way as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, journaling's been really important in the last year.
Yeah.
Like getting things down on paper.
Yeah.
Clearing my thoughts. And actually, by getting it down, clearing my thoughts, analysing, reviewing where I could be better in any encounter I've been in or anything with clients or what I've done, then allows me to improve.
Mm-hmm.
But by clearing my headspace, it makes me more productive when it comes to doing tasks.
Yeah, and you've got to let things go as well. And I don't know if you do that, but I do get beat up on certain points. They get fed up with me in the office sometimes because I'll be on a point. And they'll be like, you've told me this 20 times. And I'm like, yeah, but I want to sort it out. Yeah, but you can't sort it out. Just let it go.
Yeah.
And I won't let it go. But that bath and that whatever is when I let it go.
And this is to reinforce that point is actually, and I say, time for yourself. Like for me, I train an hour a day in the gym. That's really important. I read first thing in the morning. I like reading, which is learning self-development books or business books. But I love that. It's time for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I'm trying to say is for people listening is find things, activities that relax you, that get you motivated, which might not be work-related.
Yeah, the readings
will help
good.
You.
Yeah.
So then when it comes to your work tasks, you're more productive.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So it might be 2 hours out of the day, 2 hours of my day, or 3 hours is, or time with the kids, 3 hours, 4 hours a day is less work time, but it makes my work task more productive.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you sometimes don't need as long on task.
Yeah, no, that's right. And the reading's a big one, actually. I listen. I don't read, but I've just read my first book in years because it wasn't on Audible and I really wanted to read it. But I find if I've got a problem in work life and personal life, actually, I tend to find a book to listen to about it and see if I can if that helps me answer the question. So I've done that for the last few years now, and it does help.
I do think, self-development's really important. Mm. So I think self-development, because I read a lot, I learn from people in podcasts. We'll talk about mental health because I know you wanted to bring it out, and it was an interesting one. You learn from people, you read books, podcasts, are like listening to podcasts and things, because we don't know it all.
Mm.
So we've got to learn this information. So actually, by reading, by learning and this self-development, it makes us better.
Yeah.
It makes our performance better because we don't know all the answers. And I think the flip side of that, and this is where I think I wrote, is people, so knowledge is great, but knowledge without action is irrelevant.
Mm.
It's no use me reading for 2 hours, listening to a podcast, hearing you make great points about staff retention. If I don't then take some practical action the back of it, to do that, because it's irrelevant, because I've just took on new knowledge. Well, that's so I make a real point. If I'm reading something, I'm going to challenge myself to go live and force myself to, before I go live, I'm going to encounter with a client or pass that information on, or how can I action that in my day? If then it isn't a positive impact, it doesn't work for me, then I need to review, adapt, critique, change, and then do that again.
Yeah.
Then I can go live on LinkedIn and stuff. Things aren't going to be perfect, but then I'm challenging myself. I believe in something to share that information with people. So I think
there's nuggets in everything. In everything you do in life, I don't take masses out of things that I read, and I take a couple of nuggets. If I go to a meeting, there's a couple of nuggets in everything. I always look for those couple of nuggets, and then I try and use them.
Perfect, and that's what's really important.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to get, you know, knowledge is great, but knowledge with action is what it's about, because you get all the knowledge in the world. So I think I say a lot in the gym and stuff to clients and things, you know, giving them knowledge of foods and things, but, I'm going to tell you what proteins, carbs and fats do, here's your macros. Forget the science, forget all the knowledge here. Give people practical things they can do.
Yeah.
Actions that they're a part of.
Small.
That they can.
It's got to be small. You've got to do everything small. We've been doing it at the office. We've been putting small changes in for about a year and a half now. Just small changes. And they're becoming big changes now because there's loads of them. But just do them small at a time. Same with what you do. Everything's got to be small. What I will, there is a warning to this. And I don't know if anyone else has found this, who you've interviewed or what have you. We had a few problems with the business and I was struggling with it for a while. And I overread and overwent to presentations and I asked for too much advice from coaches and too much. And I had too much information going on. And one of my guys, I will name him Martin, he's quite a feisty lad. We was out one night having a few beers And he got a bit drunk and he said to me, your problem is, Jamie, and I was waiting for it. And he went, your problem is you know the answers and you've lost confidence in yourself. But you know the answers. You keep asking all these other people. You keep paying for all this advice. But you know the answers. Why have you stopped? He said to me, why have you stopped answering the questions yourself? And do you know what? It's the best bit of advice. It was the best bit of advice. It really made me. At first, I thought I was swearing about him. I thought, you cheeky sod and all this. But actually, he was bang on.
Yeah. And this is where I tip my hat to you. And this is you as a person, and which is a credit to you. You said earlier in the chat about you learn from anyone.
Mm, absolutely.
The bin man, the milkman.
Everyone.
Staff at any level yeah. in your work.
Yep.
And that shows humility and compassion. That shows your but that's not everyone's like, and that's a really good take home point.
Mm.
The fact you're not, I'm the leader, and no, I'm not going to listen to anyone. No. You don't grow that. So I think that's a really
people good thing. People are far better read than I am. Far yeah. better read than I am.
And why did you, if you don't mind me asking, why was it that you felt that you'd stopped knowing if you knew the answers?
I just lost a bit of confidence. I think it was hard. You know, I don't really want to go over Perth, but when I got divorced, it put a lot of pressure on the business. Yeah. You have to pay for the divorce. You have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do that. And we went for a real spell of having, I went from a spell of having like loads of spare cash to having no spare cash. And so the business was hard and you were having to make decisions and you was going through personal trauma as well at the same time.
Of course.
And you're trying to do that. And I think I just lost my confidence. Yeah. I think I just lost my way. I lost what we're good at and where we're good. And kind of was looking for quick wins, and there wasn't quick wins. You had to look at the whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
And the best, a nice little bit of advice for anyone, the best thing that we did was me and Ryan, Ryan's my number two at the office, we were paying for coaches and spending time with them and what have you. And Ryan said, but we just said, why don't we as a pair sit together for a day a month and just do it ourselves. Do the strategy ourselves. Work it out. That's what we do every month now. One day a month. Did it this week. We literally sit around my house. We go for a nice lunch. And we just talk about everything that's going on in the business. Everything. And we solve problems. And we do. And we come out of it refreshed. We probably catch up a bit more. Talk a bit more.
Builds a relationship.
Yeah. There's a lot of banter. A lot of silly stuff. Yeah, because that's.
But do you know the biggest thing?
Yes.
We say, Callum, it's the accountability.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we do know the answers. You know, at the moment, we're obviously looking around, we're working together on a lifestyle program. Mm. Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to tell the answers, you know, but it's the accountability.
Yeah.
It's the accountability that's really important. Having someone accountable, reinforce maybe what you believe. Yeah. When you get some reinforcement, it helps your decision.
Yeah.
And just having that. So actually, you two probably know the answers. But the accountability of you two to
and
each other
I'm accountable helps. To him.
Yeah.
So what's happening in my management team now, which is really good, we talked about this earlier, is they call me out. Whereas I was the one-man business. But now they say, no, boss, you're wrong on that. No, boss, you can't do that. No, don't be so hard. Don't be this, don't be that, don't be that. And having, and this isn't a sex, but having a split of two guys and two ladies on the management team, it's brilliant because the ladies do have a different view than the guys and we have a different view than them. We're probably a bit more hardcore than they are, but they're actually, and they've become harder since being on the management team, but they have a real different view and their view's so good and it's so refreshing to hear and changes your mind so much. And I'm accountable to them now.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good.
Yeah.
I think so many little nuggets being shared here, mate. It's great. So do you have any personal heroes?
Yeah, two. This is easy for me.
And why'd you hold them in such high regard?
Yeah, this one was really easy for me, and it's always been the same too. So the first one's my dad. He's unbelievable. He's taught me so much. You talk about mentors. He's an absolute mentor to me. He's so intelligent. He's a cantankerous old bugger, but he is brilliant. He knows the answers. He's run his business for years. I'm 29 years. So that's interesting. So he's probably 45 years or even more. So he's done it. He's well known in the area.
What a role model.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's just taught me so much. And he tells you stories and tells you things, how he went against, like, unions and things like that. And people don't go against unions, do they? He did. He earned three times as much as everyone else in his factory because he went against the union. Well, fair play in my view. And he just he knows the answers. He's far more intelligent than he probably realises himself. Funny enough, my mum is far more intelligent as well, but they are a great pair to do that. So he's probably my ultimate hero, but the one who's very close to it and probably the only man who's ever made me cry is Bobby Robson. Being an Ipswich fan, the man's just genius and just... you talk about compassion, you talk about understanding people, you talk about... He managed to be one of the most successful managers of all time and be just a totally and utterly lovely bloke at the same time. And he cared, he treated the players like they were his kids, really. And
Victoria's granddad and her nan spoke about him,
yeah,
because obviously knew him really well, said, just a lovely man, like just one of the best guys.
Yeah.
Just a phenomenal guy.
Yeah. I mean, one of my highlights of my life was we went to...
But you saw that in the World Cup 90.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That interaction with Gazza. Gazza's not going to make it far if he got the...
Yeah.
You can just see when players have a respect for the way it's done.
Exactly. And he deserved that. There's a couple of...
I look at Klopp now, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Klopp at Liverpool.
Similar.
I mean, and I don't know... We knew Bob because... Well, I didn't know Percy Bobby Robson, obviously, but because he was around football so long, you got to see how he was.
And he got treated terribly by the media, by lots of people. Barcelona treated him terribly. But if you actually, there's a couple of things about Bobby that I remember really well. One was there was a sports personality of the year, that thing they do on BBC. I don't know if you remember
A lifetime achievement, did he?
Yeah, and the audience wouldn't sit down. They applauded for 10 minutes non-stop. And in the end, they had to force... I mean, I was crying my eyes out. They had to force... He was very ill at the time. And they had to force the audience to sit down because they just kept getting up and clapping. Yeah. So that was amazing. And we met... I had the pleasure of meeting Bobby. Oh, wow. And it was really funny. He was signing autographs and there was a big long queue of people. So we were right at the back. It was a celebration thing. We'd had a few drinks and we was all jolly. And we got to the end. My dad said to him, "I don't want your autograph, Bobby." And Bobby looked at him a bit weird and he went, "I just want to talk to you. Is there any chance I can just talk to you?" And Bobby said, "That's just fantastic because I want to sit down. I'm knackered and I want to sit down." He said, "Would you gentlemen like to sit with me and have a chat?" And we just sat with him and chatted. And it was amazing.
What was that like?
Yeah, you can imagine. I had my two heroes there, so my dad and Bobby.
Wow.
But it was, it was just amazing. But yeah, I mean, in life, if you could be like Bobby Robson, truthfully, you know, if you could have that respect.
So because of them two heroes and the way they are, I mean, I don't know your dad, but obviously hearing how much he's helped you in business and what he's done and been around, Bobby Robson's obviously in the public eye. We know his style was. Do you think that's almost moulded your style, the way you are?
Yeah, of course, because you only learn from these people, don't you? You're obviously going to learn from your parents. As I say, there's certain styles my dad's got that I've gone slightly different than. You know, he's very... tunnel vision, and like he would have committee when he was chairman of football club and things like that. They'd have a committee, and he'd say, "I want to do this idea." The football club would, the committee would say no, and my dad would do it anyway.
Yeah.
And he would just pay for it himself and just go, "I'm doing that." So I try not to be quite as like that, but he's very, very much like that. But yeah, you just learn. But we were talking about mentors, you learn from people in life. You have to listen to people. You have to find people you respect.
So you find loads of... So this was interesting about mentors, how important mentors are. But you find almost mentors in all your years, over the years, great encounters you have with people. They've all played a part in helping you.
Yeah. And you don't realise at the time they are mentors to you. You don't...
Any conversations that stand out to you or things you've learned?
Oh, God, yeah, loads. There's a... One of the funniest ones was... quite a lot of my stories revolve around drinking, unfortunately. But I was in a bar in Hong Kong and there was a guy there and he ran a very successful promotional company. And a guy called Simon Putnick, and he was very into it, very hardcore. And we were very drunk and he started asking me loads of questions about the business. And at the time I was flying. We were absolutely having it away. And he was asking me numbers, asking me about all sorts of things that I know all the answers to now. Like, I know I'm inside out now. At the time, I knew no, I didn't know any of the answers. And I was very arrogant with him and said, like, he asked me all these questions. I couldn't answer them. And I was like, I don't care. We made 350 grand profit last year. Why do I need to know all these things? And he said to me, you do need to know these. And I was kind of just fobbed it. I was drunk and kind of fobbed him off and like, what do you know? And he's sold his company since and made a load of money out of it. And now I do everything that he asked me that night. And that kind of sticks with me.
Yeah. Like, I bet it does.
You just don't be an arrogant little plonker.
I bet it does.
Just listen to what people are saying to you. He was asking me for a reason. And that was the reason was because he knew all of those things. He knew all of them.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
It's really important.
Yeah.
It's really important.
9 years. What you find is the friends I had 29 years ago. I've got a few school friends who I'm good with, but my friends I kind of grew up with and went drinking with and played football with and all those, I've kind of fallen away from. And that's because I keep reading this. I've read this about a few times today. You're an average of the five people you hang around with the most. And that's what happens. You change, you develop. So I've changed a lot, developed a lot. I've got this business thing that I love. And that's what you have to realize about me. I love. So as much as it, my kids tell people I sell cheap pens from China. That's what they tell people. I don't, but it's funny. But I love cheap pens from China. I love, you know, I love the whole message of what we do. I love the nowadays, and that's a really bad thing to say, the cheap pens, because we like eco. I like eco. I like things that are good for the environment, sustainability. You know, that's where our industry's going. And I love the way it's changing is fantastic. And you've got to change with it. You've got to.
So these are one of the things, you know, going back to the question that Dean obviously wanted to ask, to see the evolving is like how, so products have changed, how you're sourcing. Obviously, you've had to evolve with that.
Mm.
Marketing, I mean, you didn't have social media then, but you now use social media.
Yeah.
So for you, is it the big take? Is just watching as trends change and changing role with that?
You have to listen. Don't believe the hype. I think Public Enemy said that, didn't they? Don't believe the hype of what you hear. Print was dead 10 years ago, apparently. Well, it's not dead. It's just changed. It's just evolved. There's new machinery. There's new ways of doing things, new techniques. There's variable data, personalising people's names on things. It's just changed. It's not dead. It's changed.
Do the due diligence. How do you work these things out? Are you just always in the know? You research and stuff?
Yeah, you're always at it. You're always. I love information, so I'm always. If it's about what we do, I want to know. I want to be up. I want to be up with it. I want to know what's going on. I'm a bit of a geek with machines, and I like walking around factories. I like seeing what's going on. I like seeing the techniques people use.
That's why you're just being successful. Is because you're learning these things and doing it all. You know, the passion. I think passion is really important. Like, huge passion in you.
Yeah.
You know, people go like, you can tell you love what you do.
Yeah.
I think when you're passionate about something, you believe in something, it comes across.
You've got fun is the big one. If you're having fun doing what you're doing, if you can go to work every day and have fun.
Yeah, I get it.
And make money, well, tell me what's not good about that. Yeah. And then if you're passionate about that thing as well, so for youngsters listening, if you, whatever career you go after, yeah. Callum, you like, you know, you like doing what you're doing. You're doing the right thing. If you like what you're doing, don't go and do a job just for the money.
Yeah.
You won't last, or you'll get bored, or you'll end up grey, or you'll end up. Find something you love. Find something you're into. You believe in, and actually believe in. I believe in what we do. I mean, you know, I probably didn't used to believe in it as much, but I believe in it now because I can make a difference. I can supply you things which are good for the environment, that actually aren't going to be landfill, that actually, and I believe in that, and I believe that I can teach you to use better stuff to promote your business, to make your business better. I believe I can do it. I believe I have the capabilities of doing that.
And that comes across, and it's that passion, I think it's hugely important and for people to follow. So just any words or quotes you live by?
Not really, no.
No, you don't have any?
No, no, there's two things that I was thinking about this, and I started looking up quotes when you asked that, and I thought, no, you can't do that. That's not what it's about. I've just read a book by a guy called Simon Leslie, as we talked about this earlier, who's a massive, like £100 million company, and in there he uses a statement which I didn't think I knew about, but when you actually hear it, and I keep hearing it, and it is the kiss, which is keep it simple, stupid. And that is, everything in life is quite simple. And in business, it is actually quite simple. You've just got to follow the, you know what works. You know in your mind what works. Just keep to it and keep it simple. So if you're trying to teach your staff, if it's simple, they're going to learn it. If it's not simple, they ain't going to learn it. If it gets too complicated, too convoluted, they're not. Yeah, and I really love that. The book's No Effing Sales. Bit rude. That's good.
Yeah, yeah,
and it's a really good book because it's about, it's not a sales book. It's about life.
Cool.
He's a very humble, and you should get him on this podcast.
Yeah, what's his name?
Simon Leslie. He's a very humble guy.
I'll leave it in the notes. What I do is, anyway, Joe, I'll leave all the notes in the books, anything in the notes, information about you, which I'll come at the end where what's
but
that guy
he's,
to
find
you.
But yeah.
Simon Leslie, No Effing Sales.
The other one was Tomorrow's Another Day. And I believe fully in that one. Whatever happens today, whatever happens, it's you start again tomorrow. So it doesn't matter what happened.
Yeah.
You learn from what
you
I've
get up, you keep going.
You keep going. You learn from whatever's happened. You have to learn from it. Probably in the old days, I didn't always learn from it, but I do now. I always go back to it and try and work out why it happened, how it happened, what happened. But you must wake up and get up the next morning, take the dogs for a walk, and you must just think, today's another day.
Yeah.
And even if you've had a great day the day before, you've got to start again the next day because sales is like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you do 100 grand a day, the next day, it's no good doing 1 grand the next day. You've got to do a 20 grand a day the next day.
Yeah.
So you've got to. So it's tomorrow's another day if you want one. I've always believed
in
that.
Good. That's great. Mate, it's been brilliant catching up
good.
With you. It's covered so many good bits, shared some great stuff as well. People are going to want to connect with you and find you. So could you share with me, first of all, what have you got coming up? Have you got anything coming up you want to share? How people can connect with you. I will let them know how to find you, obviously your company website and stuff.
Yeah.
And what I can say, mate, sincerely endorse that you're a great company, how you deliver it with high standards and quality. So I recommend anyone that would come to your business, mate. I will share it in the notes. So how can we find you?
I'm prolific on LinkedIn. So you'll see me about on LinkedIn. You'll find me easily on LinkedIn.
Yep.
You can email me. It's a long old email address. It's jamie@premierpmp.com. So it's jamie@premierpmp.com.
Cool.
Be delighted to hear from you. If anyone wants a surprise, one of your questions from Nick Luby was what promotions have really worked. If anyone wants to connect with me, if anyone's got a need for what we do, I will send you something in the post that you'll remember us by. I promise that.
Great stuff.
So
send you an email or connect with you and say what you're going to send me and you're going to send us something really cool. Love that. Mate, just from my perspective, thanks so much for coming on today. You've been a great guest. I've loved catching up with you, mate, and thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, buddy.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. If you enjoyed the episode, then please share it with anyone else you think that might get value. And if you can leave us a 5-star review, that would be great. It will just help us to reach more people with the podcast. If you want to get the episodes as soon as they're released, then just subscribe to the podcast. And as soon as they get released, you'll get a notification on the podcast platform you use. Once again, thanks to everyone for listening. And if you want to get in touch with me at any time, then just drop me a message on LinkedIn, Oliver Berquez. Be great to connect and have a chat with you.